This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. With ski season just around the corner, we're going to look at the tension between the ski industry and environmentalists. It's the subject of the new book, Colorado Powder Keg, by Western historian Michael Childers. At the heart of his book is the fact that skiing in Colorado brought with it tremendous growth. Starting in the 1960s, Vail went from ranch land to world-renowned resort in the span of a decade. And growth continues today. Some embrace it, others loathe it. Concerns over growth famously led Colorado voters to reject the 76 Winter Olympics after Denver had been named host city. That's just one chapter in Childers' new book. And Michael, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Where in Colorado do you see this kind of friction between the ski industry and the environmental movement? Where do you see it today?
I think the controversy over the expansion of Breckenridge today and whether or not it's going to impact the links or cause more pollution and more growth is really similar to what we've seen over the last century.
The links, in this case, being a species that some fear would be negatively impacted by this expansion. But the Forest Service seems to think not.
Yeah, the argument being is that it's too small of a population to really be impacted by this resort expansion. A similar type of argument that was done back in the 90s with Vail's expansion, and which led, of course, to the Vail arson in 1998.
This is when six buildings were set on fire by someone who described himself as with the Earth Liberation Front, an eco-terrorist group.
Yeah, that's right. It was, you know, probably the most notorious act of so-called eco-terrorism in our country's history. And the big part of it was the burning down of the Two Elks Lodge and caused somewhere around $12 million worth of damage to ski lifts and the lodges and the patrol building and really drew a lot of national attention to these sorts of issues over resort expansion, environmental impacts. You know, and ironically allowed the area to build a larger lodge than what had already been in place.
How did that happen?
After the, you know, burning down, the Vail became the victim rather than the victimizer in this sort of good guy, bad guy narrative, and was able to push through a plan with the Forest Service to add another several thousand square feet to that Two Elk Lodge and also get the expansion that they wanted. So in truth, the burning down, the arson, backfired for this, you know, small radical group of environmental activists.
Back to current day, I want to point out that Vail owns Breckenridge, and we're talking again about lynx habitat. Do you see some similarities here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think the biggest similarity is we are talking about the lynx, which is kind of this very charismatic, very, you know, we would like to see him on posters or a cat on posters. And it probably has other issues like elk or watershed, and these sorts of things are probably the larger issue than this cat. But the cat really has gained people's imaginations.
There are even bigger issues involved, aren't there? The question about, from critics' standpoint, whether ski resort expansion these days is really about serving the skier or whether it's about real estate.
Well, skiing has always been about real estate. If you look back to the 1930s and the building of Winter Park, that initially was a real estate deal. Clearly, by the 1960s, with Vail and Breckenridge itself being built in the early 60s, they were looking to sell condominiums and these sorts of things very early on. And what has happened in the last half a century is that as ski resorts grow, they need to add more money to their bottom lines for investors, et cetera. And real estate is the most efficient way to do that. And this has caused rampant growth up and down the I-70 corridor and then in every resort town and really the Western Slope.
You tackle a fascinating question issue in this book, and that is whether the Forest Service, when it approves, say, the expansion of a resort or earlier in Colorado history, a new resort altogether. Skiing is mostly, I should say, on federal land, so that's why the Forest Service is involved. But whether or not the service has to take into account the fact that approving that skiing on federal land is likely to have all kinds of sprawling effects on the private adjacent land. What's the story there? Does the Forest Service have to take that into consideration? Because we've seen rural communities transformed when these projects are approved.
Clearly, the public has long asked the Forest Service to take this into account for larger, more broad environmental issues of pollution, sprawl. But it is unclear if the Forest Service has that sort of jurisdiction. You know, as you said, they're just in charge of the public land there, the National Forest, and not really of adjacent land. You know, this was a big issue in the 1970s over Beaver Creek and whether or not they should stop development of Beaver Creek over issues of sprawl, you know, what has become Avon and Westvale, or if that's really within their jurisdiction at all. And there is no real solid answer to that. It kind of is relative.
And of course, in the case of Beaver Creek, well, the resort opened and has been quite successful.
Yeah. At the time, it was argued that this was the most environmentally friendly resort because it had gone through this decade-long controversy. And, you know, Beaver Creek has brought the growth that they worried about, but at the same time has maybe done it in a little better way than what we've seen with some of the earlier resorts.
When you look at skier numbers in Colorado, it's basically flat at this point, right?
No. It's flat nationally, and it is growing regionally within Colorado specifically. What has happened is you're seeing a consolidation of skiing by corporate-owned ski areas like Vail, Breckenridge, and they're attracting more and more people from the southeast, from the northeast, etc., to Colorado. So skiing is growing in Colorado and decreasing in other regions in the country. So those are the kind of the nuances of the numbers.
And this is what a resort like Breckenridge would point to in saying we need more skiable territory.
Yeah, I mean, the lift lines are getting longer, the slopes are getting more crowded, but how many people per run is too crowded? That seems to be also a question that at some point they probably are looking more at just selling more lift tickets and more condos and rentals and whatnot, as opposed to worrying about whether or not we as consumers have enough space to make a good powder run.
Anything wrong with that?
Not necessarily. It really, like I said, this comes down to an individual's own perspective. I consider myself an environmentalist, but I also have a season pass. And I think that is not a unique position to be in. We all want to have more space to ski. We all want to enjoy the outdoors more. Where exactly the balance point is really kind of a difficult balancing point that all of us are debating today even.
And that it sounds like even the Forest Service struggles with from decision to decision.
Yeah. What is the place of skiing and recreation is one of these questions that they debate within the organization itself and have really since its creation in 1905.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and Western historian Michael Childers is with us. His new book is called Colorado Powder Keg, Ski Resorts and the Environmental Movement. For a long time, critics have accused the Forest Service of being in bed with the ski industry. Conservationists are saying that now, in fact, about the approval of the Breckenridge expansion. You know, their thought is this happens at the expense of the environment. When you take the long view, are those accusations of coziness justified?
Yes. You know, there are times, and, you know, the Forest Service really did help foster the creation of the ski industry. By the 1930s and following World War II, they knew that they couldn't themselves develop and manage these ski resorts. And so they built relationships with private developers, and which became larger and larger corporations. They've worked hand in hand in creating master plans. They help out with some subsidies, these sorts of things. So there is a legitimacy to that. But at the same time, the ski industry also has made the same argument that the environmentalists are too cozy with the Forest Service, and that, in fact, these environmental regulations, environmental laws are too onerous. The Forest Service is put into a very difficult situation trying to balance both sides and provide a service to the public that we all demand. You know, we all want to go out and enjoy our national forests.
You talk about regulation. I was fascinated to learn in your book that at one point the Forest Service actually regulated the cost of lift tickets.
Yeah, early on, they believed that was part of their mandate. You know, this is one of the fascinating things that kind of just came up and, you know, pulled the thread out. And really by the end of the 70s, with the whole era of deregulation, you know, the airlines and the trucking industry, that leaked into lift ticket prices, of all things. Prices were deregulated and then, you know, exploded by 300% in 1 year. And, you know, so now you have season passes are, what, $1,500 in certain areas. So whether or not that it serves the public good or not is still, I think, something that should be open for debate.
Most skiing in Colorado happens along the I-70 corridor. And the question of how to ease horrendous ski traffic has dogged the state's leaders for a long time. Your book takes us back to the planning of I-70. Just an interesting fact. An alternate route would have had it going underground for 16 miles, right? Rather than over Vail Pass?
Yeah, this would have been a tunnel they called the Red Buffalo Tunnel, which would have taken it right under the Gore Wilderness at the time and really would have bypassed a lot of different areas, you know, Copper, perhaps Vail. People would have backtracked. And come to find out that it was really too expensive to dig this long of a tunnel than maintain it. You know, the other route that I talk about would have taken it right through the Fraser Valley next to Winter Park Ski Area, which would have radically changed to Grand County rather than, you know, Summit and Eagle Counties. So the issue of transportation has always been a really important one for the Western Slope in contact with Denver and the Great Plains.
And it's another point of friction between those who want growth and those who are conservation-minded. Sometimes those are the same people, you know, one can be polarized about these issues. But I wonder if you see a tension like this now in the question of how to increase the capacity of I-70.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I-70, if anyone's ever driven it on a Sunday evening coming back into the city, knows it's just not big enough. The solutions seem to be multiple. And so do we level Idaho Springs and build through there? Of course, the folks there would have some issues with losing their homes. Or do we build a high-speed rail? How do you pay for that? That's the same sort of issues that we've seen in the past. Or do we build another route? And that goes back to the same issues that these engineers were looking at back in the 50s and 60s. There just aren't that many good routes through the Colorado Rockies. They're just a very difficult place to build roads and these sorts of things.
I'd like to wrap up our discussion with a question about whether climate change is bringing together, in some respects, ski resorts and environmentalists. You know, without snow, ski resorts aren't going to be very successful. And so is there a natural point of commonality then?
Yeah, I mean, you made a good point where without snow, this whole industry just falls out of existence. And the ski industry itself has really made a concerted effort to be aggressive with global warming. You know, they have the Sustainable Slopes Program, where they're looking to reduce greenhouse gases. They're trying to help people get up to the ski resorts in fewer and fewer cars, these sorts of things. And the environmental community has, you know, acknowledged and embraced those in some degrees, but then there are still people that say that it really is just a greenwashing, that skiers are still doing the same destructive behaviors. And in fact, this is just a way to make consumers feel good about their decision to go up and ski at these areas when, in fact, there are some real significant environmental issues beyond climate change.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Michael Childers is an environmental historian at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. His new book is called Colorado Powder Keg, Ski Resorts and the Environmental Movement.